This afternoon in this room, I testified before the Office of Independent Counsel and the grand jury. I answered their questions truthfully, including questions about my private life, questions no American citizen would ever want to answer. Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong. Now this matter is between me, my wife, and our daughter, and our God. But it is private. It's nobody's business but ours. Even presidents have private lives.
That's President Bill Clinton, August 17th, 1998, addressing the nation, admitting at long last that he had an affair with Monica Lewinsky, and saying that the issue, now that he had made his admission both before the grand jury and the nation, was private, and it was really none of our business. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's open lines for the next half hour with your answers to this question. Does a candidate's personal life influence how you vote? Now it's not just President Bill Clinton. It's two prospective candidates for president. Rudolph Giuliani, third wife, at least one affair. Former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, third wife, at least one affair. Does it matter to you? Does it affect how you vote? 505-780-1800-730-2727, or email us issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, Issues Etc. is underwritten in part by LCMS World Relief. They're going to be hosting a conference next month here in St. Louis called the LCMS Conference on Mercy. Find out more about it by going to our homepage, issuesetc.org, and you will find there a logo, LCMS Conference on Mercy, with a link, and you'll find all the information you need there. It's going to be April the 30th through May the 2nd here in St. Louis. We'll be broadcasting live from this conference. It's the LCMS Conference on Mercy here in St. Louis, the 30th of April through the 2nd of May. Let's go back to the phones to South St. Louis, where Don is listening. Hi, Don.
Yeah, Todd?
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I think you're looking at the wrong party here. I think Bill Clinton, all the Republican candidates, they don't bother me as much as the wife of Bill Clinton, who never left her husband. I don't think it was because of her marriage vows. I think we're witnessing right now why Bill and Hillary are still married.
But we don't know why she isn't divorced from her husband, so that's nothing but speculation. So are you saying you really have no problem with the whole third wife affair in the case of Giuliani or Gingrich, because Hillary's the greater of the evils here?
Yeah, I look at their politics. And her politics scare me much more than anybody else's.
All right, Don, thank you very much. Well, that's not so much giving Gingrich and Giuliani a pass. It's just saying, well, if it's them or Hillary, I'll take a multiple divorced infant. What would you call someone? What did they call Clinton back in those days? They called him a philanderer. An old term, but had some currency in 1998. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. That, by the way, is exactly the logic that was being used by those who supported Bill Clinton during the time of his public peccadilloes. Hey, he's better than a Republican. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And call us a little bit more audio open lines for that next 20 minutes. Here's a listener in Warrenton. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Earlier, somebody kind of put it on Samuel that he was a bad father. Samuel is the one that anointed David and Saul and those. He's the one that got the message, the vision that he was to speak with the Lord, that Eli was to lose his two sons. Eli was the bad father, the priest that raised Samuel.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Thank you very much. We should correct this. An earlier caller said that Samuel was a terrible father, but he was a prophet. We don't know whether Samuel was the father of anybody. Samuel was raised by a priest whose two natural sons turned out to be rather rotten, and Eli the priest was the one who was the bad father. Well, former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani is doing his very best to court social conservatives. He's doing this because he understands what he might face in 2008. He has several issues that are making this a little more difficult to him. Maybe this divorce and adultery issue is one. I don't know. Let's find out. Here's an NBC News report.
Meanwhile, the frontrunner in early GOP polls, former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, is working to shore up his conservative credentials. His long-held positions on abortion and gay rights, along with his personal life, which has sometimes veered into soap opera territory, may hold him back with some Republican primary voters. Here's NBC's Ron Allen.
Today, Rudy Giuliani focused on what may be his toughest challenge, winning over the Republican base.
Thanks very much.
He got the endorsement of a conservative senator, even though Giuliani is for abortion rights, gun control, and gay rights.
It's very clear to me that he's not running for president to advance any liberal social agenda.
Hot-button issues dog Giuliani. Today, this 1989 speech in support of public funding for abortion hit the internet.
There must be public funding for abortions for poor women, as I say. You know, I disagree with myself on some things. So there are going to be disagreements within the party.
However, Giuliani's supporters insist conservatives will agree he's the type of leader America needs. And that's been his message. America's mayor, evoking memories of September 11th.
When they stop planning to come here and kill us. When that ends, the war is over.
The question is whether 9/11 will be enough to overcome the social issues and Giuliani's two divorces and three marriages.
He is fond of saying 9/11 changed everything, and it's a way of almost wiping the slate clean of that pre-9/11, of those pre-9/11 character questions.
Now, perhaps another blemish. His estranged son Andrew says he won't campaign for his father. Fallout from Giuliani's bitter divorce with Andrew's mother. While Giuliani asks for privacy, critics want voters to know more.
If one will not honor their commitments in their private life, what would lead voters to think that they would honor commitments they make in their public life?
And here in New York, many remember Giuliani had a somewhat mixed record before 9/11. He reduced crime, slashed taxes, but also had a reputation for being rash and divisive.
But we have to remain very, very aggressively on offense.
All right, how are you?
For now, he leads the pack, hoping September 11th carries him through November of next year.
Thank you.
Ron Allen, NBC News, New York.
Joining me now with some analysis, NBC Washington Bureau Chief and moderator of Meet the Press, Tim Russert. And Tim, what do you make of Giuliani's success in the polls, given some of his challenges?
Well, Campbell, his campaign believes that on September 11th, it was permanently etched in Americans' mind that he is a leader. He was the one politician speaking to the country. And they think it dwarfs all other issues. But we're seeing now this week our evangelical Christians and some of his political opponents beginning to say, wait a minute, is this where the Republican Party wants to go? We will find out whether or not the Giuliani camp is correct, that it's terrorism and national security that matters first and foremost to social conservatives.
Tim, we mentioned Senator Chuck Hagel a moment ago. There are a number of other Republicans who are still contemplating a run. Is that surprising?
No. In our poll, Campbell, 56% of Republicans say they are satisfied with their current choices, which means there are a lot of Republicans who are dissatisfied and open to more people. Senator Fred Thompson, the former senator from Tennessee, is exploring the race. But the difficulty is this, Campbell, whether it's Senator Thompson, Senator Hagel, former Speaker Newt Gingrich, the entry fee is money. If you want to participate in these primaries and caucuses in a vigorous and robust way, you need to raise money. The longer you stay out of the race, the more difficult that becomes.
All right, Tim Russert for us tonight from Washington. Tim, thanks.
Thanks, Kim.
You know, it struck me there is the argument that is being made by those who are calling Giuliani's viability into question is, look, if someone can't honor their commitments in private life, then how do we expect them to honor their commitments in public life? Now, these are arguments being made by, I guess you could say, Giuliani's Democratic opponents. Roll the clock back 11 years or so, And those were exactly the arguments being made about Bill Clinton when he was serving as our president. If he can't honor his commitments in his private life, how can we expect him to honor his commitments in his public life? Maybe you even made those arguments. Still making them today. That's my question for you. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's talk with Mark in Brighton. Hi, Mark.
Pastor Todd, wasn't it Luther who said, better a competent Reagan than an incompetent Carter?
We don't know what he said. Referring to his competent Turk?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, well, we don't know if Luther said it or not. We know that there's a scholar who says he said it. Although, recently we asked Don Francisco whether or not that was consistent with Luther's thinking. He said, yeah, it's consistent with what Adam Francisco had to say. He said that was consistent with Luther's thinking about the Turk, although he would not have been happy to serve under any Turkish rule, without a doubt. I think he was making the statement that kings and princes need not be Christians. What are your thoughts there, Mark?
Well, I sympathize with people who want decent character in their leaders. I mean, I really do. I was going back and forth with a friend of mine, and I was kind of talking about how we've kind of become dilettantes today, in that we really don't, live a Christian life or, follow Christ or however you want to phrase it. And I think, we accept things today we would have never accepted. I mean, you look at ads in the paper or magazines today, and, my grandfather would have thought that stuff to be pornography. And, we just pass it by. So, I mean, I'm very sympathetic of that, the desire to have good character in your leaders. And I'd rather have a competent Reagan than, an incompetent individual who, talks the Christian talk and may not be as competent.
Okay, so could I, just one more second here, Mark, could I put these words in your mouth and tell me if you'll accept them? You would rather have a competent adulterer than an incompetent but faithful husband in the White House.
Yeah, I think so. Because again, the dangers we face today, I sympathize with people who wonder about Giuliani and his view on abortion. But I mean, I think again, for the leader of your country, yeah, I think I'd rather have competence.
All right, Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate your thoughts. Let's see what Dee has to say, calling from her car. Hi, Dee.
Hi, how are you? I read on the internet today that Congressman Ron Paul from Texas had turned his hat in the ring for the presidential race in the Republican Party.
And why is that significant, Dee?
Because he's the only 100% pro-life candidate that the Republican Party has. He's also against illegal immigration. He's for smaller federal government. He is for the taxpayer keeping more of their money, and just several issues like that. He's 100%. He's been in Texas a long time as a congressman, and he has a 100% voting record on the life issue.
Do you know what his religious affiliation is, Dee?
Affiliation in what?
Do you know if he's a Christian, a Mormon, whatever? Do you know what he is?
I believe that he's some type of Protestant, but I couldn't tell you which Protestant denomination he's a member of.
All right,
that
Dee,
I'm not sure.
Thank you very much, Dee. I guess that would make 11 in the Republican race right now if Paul is just most recently dropped his hat in there. I will correct one thing Dee said. She said he's the only 100% pro-life person that the Republican Party has. I'm pretty sure that Huckabee, who's still in the race, is he still in the race? I think he's 100% pro-life, too. Now, he may not have the record legislatively that people have been keeping track of it, but I'm pretty sure that Huckabee would get 100% pro-life rating. Giuliani wouldn't. He'd get a 0% pro-life rating, probably. Mitt Romney, it depends on when you started measuring. Well, with even 11 in the race, the Republican Party isn't as optimistic as one might think they should be about keeping the White House. Here's the story from CBS News on the lack of optimism in the GOP.
Excuse me, guys. So far, the Republicans running for president are not creating much optimism within their own party.
Of the Senate.
Just half of Republican primary voters think a Republican will win the presidency. Among Democratic voters, 84% think they'll win in 2008. Overall, only one in four registered voters think the Republicans will carry the White House next time around. Former Republican Party head Ed Gillespie is not surprised.
You know, we're in a period in our party where we have to rehabilitate the Republican Party brand.
Right now, in a head-to-head matchup of the frontrunners, Rudy Giuliani leads John McCain by 9 points. That's down from a 21-point Giuliani lead just last month.
We're very happy where we are. We're very happy.
McCain's optimism reflects the idea that the more conservatives hear about Giuliani's stance on social issues, the more his support from them will drop. Take abortion.
There must be public funding for abortions for poor women. We cannot deny any woman the right to make her own decision about abortion because she lacks resources.
That clip from 1989 is playing on YouTube right now. But there are problems in the poll for Senator McCain as well. Just 39% of Republicans polled want a nominee who commits to staying in Iraq. McCain is a strong supporter of staying until the job is done. But the conventional wisdom is that it's too soon to be too worked up about polls.
In politics, nothing's ever as good or as bad as it seems.
But this is an unconventional campaign. The next election is well over a year and a half away. And yet 77% of registered voters say they are already paying at least some attention to the race.
All right, there's the story. So optimism wanes, but of course we still are almost 2 years away from the actual presidential candidacy. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, your optimism or lack thereof is probably premature. Joel writes this from St. Louis, asking, is it fair to apply 1 Timothy 3 to presidents? Now, he's talking here about, strictly speaking, the qualifications that Paul lays out for pastors and bishops in the church. Joel writes, I'm not sure either way I would like to, but this is a blurring of the criteria of a pastor with the responsibility and role of a president. I would say yes. Let's not stretch Paul's words that are intended to apply to overseers, deacons, pastors, bishops in the church, to our governmental leaders. Now, let's not misunderstand. When Paul says husband of one wife, he's not saying that God expects only pastors to be husband of one wife. God certainly expects all husbands to be husband of but one wife. God hates divorce. However, those particular qualifications are intended by Paul for the pastoral office and not for the presidential office. This is an issue of prudence, isn't it? Is it prudential? Is it wise to elect someone who has a lousy marital track record? Is it wise to vote for someone who either can't keep a wife or doesn't intend to keep his wife? The last hour and a half conversation, or the last hour's conversation, really has centered around that issue. 10 years ago, Christian conservatives, were very clear on this. They were questioning whether or not Bill Clinton was even qualified to serve as president, given the fact that he could not remain faithful to his wife, apparently. But now, when we have other men who seem to have the same problem, the question seems to have waned. The conviction that, well, can he really be qualified if he can't be faithful to his wife? If he can't keep the promise he made to his wife, then will he keep the promise that he makes to us, the American people, when he's inaugurated? I think those are questions we need to continue to ask, regardless of who is being the adulterer. Who is committing the adultery? Okay, time for one final cut here during audio open lines. Here's Britt Hume of Fox News on Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards and what he thinks Jesus would do.
Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards may have been offended when conservative columnist Ann Coulter used the word faggot to describe homosexuals when speaking about Edwards last weekend, but he has wasted little time in trying to use it as a fundraising tool. This page on Edwards' website asked for contributions to raise $100,000 in, quote, Coulter cash to, quote, fight back against the politics of bigotry. The page also says, quote, we must show that inflaming prejudice to attack progressive leaders will only backfire. In the meantime, Edwards says that even though he has a personal relationship with God, he rejects the notion that the U.S. is a Christian nation. He tells the website BeliefNet, quote, I guess the word Christian is what bothers me, even though I am a Christian. I think that America is a nation of faith. But the candidate doesn't believe Americans are doing a good job of living like Jesus. Edwards, who has drawn fire from some for his new $6 million, 28,000-square-foot mansion in North Carolina, says, quote, I think that Jesus would be disappointed in our ignoring the plight of those around us who are suffering and our focus on our own selfish short-term needs. I think he would be appalled, actually, said Edwards.
Now, see, this is what irritates me the most. Let's lay aside the issue of the candidates' marital lives. What irritates me the most is when political candidates hire Jesus to be one of their political consultants. When candidates begin to opine on what kind of policies Jesus would put in place when it comes to the poor. The big question, and it all started with you guys, evangelicals. You're the ones who started this whole what would Jesus do thing. So don't blame John Edwards for simply answering the question that you wore on your wrist for 5 years. Don't blame him. It's a misuse of and a misunderstanding of Jesus himself. Jesus, contrary to what President George Bush said when he was running for president the first time, Jesus is no political philosopher. He's a savior. He's not much good in politics. He really isn't. He doesn't have the answers that our society needs. Or at least if he has them, he's not interested in providing them. He doesn't have a political blueprint. He doesn't have a policy manual. He doesn't have a platform. What he has is a body that he's willing to lay down in suffering and death for our sin. So whether you're on the right or on the left, using Jesus as your political advisor is ill-advised. Well, this summer at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, they're going to be holding Christ Academy 2007 for 2 weeks. It's going to be held this summer from June 17th through the 30th there on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For 2 weeks, the men will go to class, to chapel, interact with the faculty, and be able to, in that hands-on way, entertain the prospect of a future life of seminary study and studying for the pastoral ministry. It's for high school-aged men. It's from June 17th through the 30th. Find out more by going to our homepage, issuesetc.org. Look for the Christ Academy logo or call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. It's Christ Academy 2007. When we come back from this break, here in Studio A, Uwe Simonetto joins us. We're going to talk about Lutherans and political influence. Stay tuned.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
One of the best ways that children learn is through verse and rhyme. Those kind of things stick in their heads. It's also true of the truths of the Christian faith. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for March is a children's book set in verse and rhyme by Dandy Daly Mackle. It's called Easter is for Me. It tells the story of Jesus' sacrificial death for sinners and his resurrection from the dead for sinners. It's called Easter is for Me. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for March. Find out more at our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find the book on our homepage. Or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and ask about the Issues Etc. book of the month for March. It's a children's book. called Easter is for Me, 1-800-325-3040, or issuesetc.org.
Western society, it's changed its foundation.
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the powerful book Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Ken, in what way do you believe our culture has changed, and why is it important to know how it has?
You know, Mark, when I attended public school in Australia, I remember our principal having prayer with us at the start of each day. And I also recall my teachers reading Bible stories to us before we started our classwork. I think everyone heard about the Ten Commandments. But things are very different today, aren't they? I don't know of any public schools that have prayer or Bible readings as part of their daily schedule. And sadly today, students by and large are taught that there's no God and we're all evolved animals. The same is true of countries like America and England. In fact, probably all Western nations. You see, years ago when evangelists preached the message of the cross, people in our culture understood the message. They knew about God's law and about sin. They understood who Jesus was. But things are so different today. Our society has changed from one based on God's word to one based on evolution. Many Christians don't understand that unless we see the foundation change back again, we'll not be able to communicate the gospel message effectively at all.
During today's culture wars, it's becoming increasingly difficult for us to share biblical truths in a way that people will listen. Ken Ham provides some tips, though, in a fascinating free booklet. Read Ken's observations about the culture wars and the book of Genesis when you go to AnswersRadio.com.
They become tight as a community and join together in prayer and greater understanding of Lutheran theology.
Pastor Scott Clems of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, talking about the goals of the young men who attend Christ Academy 2007.
Christ Academy allows high school men to become a full, equal partner in the life of the seminary for 2 weeks every June. They attend chapel 4 times a day with the student body and faculty and staff. They go to classes for 3 or 4 hours a day, regular classes taught by the seminary faculty and staff. They become tight as a community and join together in prayer and greater understanding of Lutheran theology.
For more information on Christ Academy, June the 17th through the 30th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Theological Seminary, 1-800-481-2155.
Sign on at 7:15 Wednesday with AM 850 KFUO for the morning show, where we talk with Connie Dickman, president of the American Dietetic Association. She'll give us some cancer prevention tips. Singer and songwriter Erin Bodie talks about her mission trip to Africa and the upcoming CD she will release. We'll hear from Dr. Bob Weiss of Concordia Seminary and Pastor Ted Cook of Zion Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh, Kansas, with Bible-based messages in the morning on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Here in the last half hour of the program, it was a pretty nice segue from talking about presidential candidates to our subject here for the last half hour, Lutherans and political influence. Uwe Simonetto joins us here in Studio A. He's an international journalist, a director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. He's author of an article in the forthcoming Reporter titled Sitting in the Back Pews of Life. Uwe, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be back.
How many Lutherans are there currently serving in Congress in the U.S.?
18. Two of those Missouri Synod.
Two. How does that compare with other denominations?
Well, let me run down the list. There are 217,000 Unitarians, two congressmen, like the 2.5 million LCMS Lutherans. There are 150,000 Christian Scientists, five congressmen. There are 2.2 million Episcopalians, less than LCMS Lutherans, 37 congressmen. There are 5.2 million Jews, including the non-practicing Jews, 43 congressmen. There are, in all Presbyterian denominations, 3.9 million, 43 congressmen. They are in the various Methodist denominations, 9 million Americans, 62 congressmen. And you can go on and on and on. The Roman Catholics are about the only ones well represented, but they are the largest group. But it is absolutely phenomenal how little weight the Lutherans pull in Washington.
If you count all Lutherans in the United States, I think you're somewhere in the neighborhood about 9 million Lutherans.
About 9 million, yeah.
So of 9 million, only 18 are serving in the U.S. Congress. Why is this? Why are Lutherans underrepresented, at least according to the numbers?
Well, certainly not because there is a national program out to get Lutherans. It is, I feel and I suspect, and it goes with our tradition, that somehow Lutherans feel they should not pull their weight in national politics. They are well represented in other fields, you know, the army and the sciences and lots of fields, in the military. But in politics, no. And there are various explanations. One explanation is that that they are still sort of smarting from the Hate the Hun syndrome after World War One, and now they're still pulling their horns. No, we shouldn't do anything about that. There's another explanation given by my friend Bob Benny, who is a Lutheran theologian, ELCA, who says, well, the Lutherans who came over here didn't really want to escape from oppressive government and just wanted to plow their lands and raise their cattle and not get involved in national politics at all. All of which is true, but it is still a scandalous thing, given that we are a denomination that has a very rich theology form, what we call the left-hand kingdom, the secular world, a secular realm where we are supposed to pull our weight, we're supposed to dirty our hands, where we are supposed to introduce our treasures, and especially our doctrinal treasures, and we don't do it.
So this is a multifaceted issue. It seems as though one of the issues that you raise in your article, the article that you've written is called Sitting in the Back Pews of Life, is kind of a general Lutheran quietism when it comes to politics.
Correct. Yes, and that it supports, alas, the prejudices held against Lutherans almost since Luther's day, but especially, of course, since World War II. And people just, and you know, this article, by the way, which I only published on my website, got more responses, negative, of course, the positive never come in, but negative responses than anything I'd ever written. And this thing is not even published in the report again. There is something there that we have to seriously consider, because imagine one thing, Todd. We have a good theology. We have a fantastic educational system, wonderful, the second largest parochial school system after the Roman Catholics in this country. 10, 11 universities, if you count Valparaiso. We have all these institutions, all of which should prepare, including, of course, our congregations, should prepare us for life and our children, young people, for life. Not just in the ministry in the church, but for life at large. And still, Lutherans don't pull their weight. Luther said, go out there, do your work, out of service to others, to your neighbor, out of love for your neighbor. And if you screw up, well, then you still have the opportunity. You always have the opportunity to ask for forgiveness and grace, and God will put things right. There is an immensely rich Lutheran theology, richer than, I think, most other, certainly Protestant theologies, on this issue. And yet, in the United States, and actually also in other countries, confessional Lutherans are not present. And what it has one, if I may just add one thing, it has one dastardly effect. Because so many Lutherans, especially in the Missouri thing, seem to think, well, they should only be party to one particular political persuasion Republican, they avoid the possibility or the chance to go, for example, into the Democratic Party and change some of their most egregious policies from within, such as the affirmation of the mass murder of unborn children, such as those crazy same-sex marriage issues. They just say, oh, they're defeatists. They say, well, they can't do this, we're not wanted, and this is not our thing, we better keep our hands clean. Well, they will be before their maker one day and say, well, show me your clean hands. Do you know what? They're actually dirty.
So your point is that Lutherans have no theological reason for their lack of political involvement and influence.
Absolutely none. No, quite the contrary. They have a theological obligation from our own theology to get fully involved in politics.
Let's talk about that theology, and I think we need to frame it in two ways. They're interrelated to one another. First of all, the famous distinction that Luther articulated between what he would have called two governments,
right,
or what's often called two kingdoms. Explain right. it to us.
Well, there is the right-hand government, as we call it. That's Christ's government. That's the church. It's the right-hand kingdom where God and Christ rule. That's under the gospel. And then you have the left-hand kingdom, and the two are not disconnected. The two should not be mixed together, but the two are not opposed to one another. So the left-hand kingdom is the secular kingdom, which is where God rules in a hidden way, where we all, from the president on down to the shoeshine boy, are masks behind which God acts in this world. And where the operating system, to talk computerese, is the law that God has given us in Scripture and given to those who are not Christians or Jews, and by writing them on our hearts, we call that natural law.
The other element of Lutheran theology that I know you're very hot on is the element of vocation, which fits,
correctly,
can really only properly be understood in light of that two-kingdom theology. What is the doctrine of vocation that Scripture sets forth, and how does it bear upon the Christian's life as it is lived simultaneously in both kingdoms?
Correct. The doctrine of vocation states that we all have, each and every one of us, a vocation calling in our secular lives, as parents, as journalists, as secretaries, as presidents of the United States, as congressmen, etc., etc., etc. And that is what our primary function in life is to do this work out of love for our neighbor. So if you're a politician, out of love for the governed. If you are a plumber, out of love for the person whose lavatory you have to repair. And if we do this, this is indeed the highest service we can render to God. And now it will have to do with the devil if for some reason Lutherans have less of a calling to politics from God than, say, Methodists or Presbyterians. It makes no sense. It is simply that they actually are quietist and, I think, cowardly. I think Lutherans are often cowardly, and they don't face up to their responsibilities in the world. They complain about the slaughter, the Holocaust, the abortion Holocaust that goes on in this world. But unlike Congressman Bart Stupak, who is a practicing Roman Catholic and a Democrat, who fights within the Democrat Party tooth and nail against the abortion lobby, Lutherans say, "Well, we don't even start there. We are not running for office." And then I get letters to the editors here who say, "Well, maybe Lutherans run, but they are not elected." Well, I do not think that there is such a discrimination out there against Lutherans. It is simply that not enough competent people run.
I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc., coming to you live this Tuesday, March the 13th. We're talking about Lutherans and political influence. Uwe C. Minetto is our guest. Let's see what Rob has to say, waiting in his car. Hi, Rob.
Yes, hi, Dr. Minetto. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I want to take a stab at why Lutherans are not good in politics here. And I just wanted to see what you react to this. I've heard it said that Lutherans don't care what government they're under, and so they'll just operate under whatever government. And so that, to me, says, you know, well, I don't care, so I'm not going to be involved, because whatever comes along is fine. But they lose the dream of what this union was supposed to be. The states were supposed to be the seats of government, and that's where we're to be involved. But the federal government is just an agreement among the states for certain things. But the way that the whole country's gone is that the federal government is everything, and that's where we're indifferent. But then we got to get the dream back for this country, is to be involved so that the states are what they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Rob, well, thank you very much for the call. Uwe, let's respond to both parts of his thing, that perhaps Lutherans have adopted the idea that whatever government we're under is irrelevant. We just keep our heads down and go about our business.
Well, that is, of course, that is giving up on the left-hand kingdom. And why don't they say, well, whatever bread we bake doesn't matter. Lutherans, like all other Christians, like all non-Christians, are responsible for this government. They are voters. They are the sovereign in a democracy. So that's number one. So therefore, they have to be realistic. I noticed that Rob used the word dream a lot. We are not dreaming here. This is not a dream. We have to be practical in the left-hand kingdom, use our reason, and our reason alone. Our reason is a gift from God for us to find our way around this left-hand kingdom, around this world. Use our reason to operate in the left-hand kingdom and avail ourselves in politics and in the media and everywhere where God places us. And if somebody has an interest in politics, then for God's sake, go and run for office. But if you stop moping, then, of course, the next thing you'll find is that suddenly you have something like the Nazi regime. Let's not forget, Hitler wasn't elected by the majority of the German people. He was elected by a sort of 33% who actually went to the polls. All the other idiots didn't go.
It was the plurality of the German people that elected him, but certainly not the majority.
It wasn't even the plurality of the Germans. It was 33% of the people of the Germans actually went to the polls. So it was a plurality
of the voters,
of the 33% who could bother to go to the polls, and so we shouldn't therefore I am German after all, but I fully agree with those who say the people who did not go to the polls, the people who did not oppose Hitler in any other way, as candidates, for example, are as guilty for what has happened in Germany between 1933 and 1945 as those idiots who voted for Hitler, because they could have done otherwise. As we say in our public confession at the beginning of each Eucharistic service, we ask for forgiveness for what we have done and what we have left undone. And that's what we have left undone. And leaving something undone in the left-hand kingdom is as sinful as doing things wrong.
Folks, do you have some thoughts on the issue of Lutherans and political involvement? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. How do you respond to someone who says, look, the Lutheran teaching on vocation certainly affirms that the person who stays at home and mows his grass is as valuable as the person who is out there in the halls of government signing bills or crafting legislation. And therefore, perhaps that's the reason why Lutherans are less involved at the level of government.
Well, if mowing the lawn and just mowing the lawn and doing nothing other than mowing the lawn is indeed the vocation of such a person, then indeed it is as valuable. But if you're just staying at home mowing the lawn because you don't have the guts and the self-confidence and the brains, or you don't want to muster the brains you've got, to do something in public life, to serve your neighbor on other levels, then just staying at home, mowing the lawn, is a cop-out, isn't it?
How much of this do you think is due to the fact that that Lutheran pastors have, even sometimes where God's word clearly speaks, viewed certain issues as quote-unquote political issues that cannot be addressed to their people in any way? And I'm thinking here in particular, I have heard Lutheran pastors say, well, I don't talk about abortion because that's a political issue, or I'm not going to talk about gay marriage because that's a political issue, and I'm not called to deal with political issues, even though God's word clearly speaks on both of those issues.
Well, you see, this is again a cop-out. Of course, I know this happens a lot among Lutheran pastors. I've even heard a Lutheran pastor speak of abortion clinics as women's health centers. Here's the point. Luther said that the preacher must grab into the prince's snout, but never interfere with his craft. In other words, if a prince, or if a ruler, or if a minister, or if a, I mean, a government minister, or a congressman, favors the slaughter of innocent unborn children, then it is the duty of the pastor to point this out and say it's against Scripture. You don't even have to name names. All you have to do is to preach against the crime. Everybody knows what we're talking about. And now to say this is the law, we forget that there is a third law, a third type of law, that is not from God. We distinguish between Mosaic law, Ten Commandments, on the one hand, on the other hand, natural law written upon our hearts, conscience. Even people who've never heard of God or Christ have that. And thirdly, you have what is called positive law, and that is a law that is not from God but is entirely man-made. Now, the law permitting abortions is positive law.
Certainly does not come from God.
It certainly does not come from God, and is in total violation. Anybody who still has his conscience together, and I believe most people do, must realize that killing, sucking an unborn child out of a mother's womb, mangling it to death for the benefit of someone who doesn't want to, can't be bothered to bring this child to term, that this is against God's law. And if it is lawful, it is only lawful in the sense of being a positive law.
Let's go to the phones and get some quick responses, if we could, to our callers. First up, Bernard calling from his car. Hi, Bernard.
Yes, I enjoyed the program and wanted to say that the Lutherans I know all vote and they participate in politics. Nationally, Rehnquist was a Lutheran raised in the Wisconsin Senate. Of course, they normally came from the area of Prussia. Senator Hollingsworth, a Democrat, I think was a well-known Lutheran. But I think that one way to gauge religious activism is to look to see who goes to party meetings and whether or not there ever delegates from any particular political party. And I can't imagine that Wisconsin and Minnesota don't have a large number of Lutheran activists, maybe not in Congress, but I mean, they're just areas in which Lutherans are.
All right, Bernard, our time is very short. I'm going to give Uwe 30 seconds to respond to Bernard.
Bernard mentioned Rehnquist. He was, of course, not a congressman. He was an appointee. Hollings was, Paul Simon, all these people, but they are so minute, as I said before, in numbers. As I said before, with large Lutheran states like Wisconsin and Minnesota, it surprises me that they don't provide more senators or congressmen or whatever, Lutheran.
Roland is calling from South City. Hi, Roland. Our time is short.
Well, good afternoon. I can't speak to the lack of motivation, though it's frustrated me here greatly. I registered to vote in my high school office when I turned 18 on my 18th birthday and have missed very few elections. But, you know, I come from a different class of people. My family is, I'm a first-generation American. My father is from East Germany, like Uwe. My mother's from Riga. So I grew up in a very anti-communist household. So we were always very politically active. We were motivated to be so. But the Germans I find here, you know, have experienced some of what I've experienced, which is, you know, as soon as people find out you're a German, there's always that chant of Nazi ringing in the background somewhere, especially when you talk about entering into politics.
All right, Roland, thank you very much. Deal with, if you would, his first point, and that is Lutherans do tend to understand their need for political activism when communism is the government.
Yes. Now, Roland is right, of course, in both fields. Yes, they tend to see the need in to fight communism, for example, but they are then rather slow in fighting the evils of a regime which they can change without violence, but simply with their vote. That's number one. Secondly, yes, I do agree there is this anti-German sentiment, has been. I have experienced a lot of that myself. But that must not preclude us from getting involved. Then we have to overcome this hurdle, because neither Roland nor I have been Nazis. We were too young to even have been had this chance of being Nazis.
All right, one more quick phone call. Quick phone call and a very quick response. Josh in Crestwood. Hi, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You said earlier that Jesus is not a good political advisor, but in Lutheranism, do we have good role models of politicians that we could kind of look up to? Who in history or contemporary would you say are good Lutheran politicians?
Great question, Joel. Thank you very much. Uwe, you've only got about 20 seconds.
Frederick the Wise. Then Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a pastor, became a politician. Karl Gerdler, mayor of Leipzig, would have been the leader of the resistance revolt against Hitler. There were lots of very, very powerful Lutherans in Germany after World War II. Erhard, the inventor, the father of the economic miracle in Germany, was a Lutheran, for example.
Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism, and he's authored an article, as yet unpublished, but I imagine after it's published, the email will continue to flow in, Uwe,
yes,
called Sitting in the Back Pews of Life. You can read it on the web. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click links, and you'll find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Thank you for being our guest again.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on the program, The Truth About Muhammad, Robert Spencer will be our guest. Thursday, we're going to begin a three-part series on false views of spiritual aspiration. It's a very interesting series we're going to be doing with Dr. Stephen Hine, various ways or ladders, as one might say, that people have devised to try and reach God, all of them contrary to the Christian faith. Then we'll also talk, so we'll be talking about moralism and mysticism, but moralism will be the first in that three-part series with Stephen Hine. Then Friday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Carl Fikencher about repentance. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.